Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashmi. Thanks so much for being with us. India is attempting to make the semi-autonomous Kashmir region a lot less autonomous. There has been a crackdown on this region since August of last year, and now decade-old laws repealed. Those living in Indian-controlled Kashmir have protested, and now another shutdown has been implemented by New Delhi on the region. Local residents are defiant about Indian measures, especially those allowing others to buy land in this region instead of just locals, as the previous law had allowed. I'd like to welcome my guests to this program, and hopefully we will have an interesting debate right after this package.
A shutdown is being observed in Indian-controlled Kashmir after New Delhi amended and repealed a series of decades-old land laws of Kashmir. The new reorganization law issued on October 26, 2020, opens up all of Jammu and Kashmir to every Indian citizen and removes every restriction that prevented large land holdings. Allows the Indian Armed Forces to take over land wherever they desire and gives sweeping powers to the government to take over any land and property for industrial use and bring in big businesses to set up their shops. The October 26, 2020 order repealed 13 state laws and amends 14 laws. Experts say this is to further the agenda behind the abrogation.
The aim is very much, yes, to disempower the Muslim majority of the state of J&K. And in fact, to erase them in history and in culture. I think that that is something that is not a big surprise. The question is how successful they're going to be at doing it, and it's something that only time will tell.
According to historic date check, these laws were introduced to empower the majority Muslims who were suffering immensely under the non-Muslim rulers. Not only this, but the rights to buy and sell land in Kashmir were also confined to the people of Kashmir. Experts say India's move in Kashmir since August 5, 2019 has further internationalized this conflict.
Kashmir is a small blip on the international scenario, you know, but I think that it is gaining salience and it is gaining an advantage. We are gaining an advantage out of it simply. And one of the biggest sort of evidences of that is what happened with the Chinese so-called, not so-called, but actual incursion into Jammu and Kashmir territory in Ladakh.
In response to the shutdown call by Pro-Freedom Camp of Kashmir, shops and businesses remained closed. Huge number of government forces were seen guarding the streets to avoid law and order problems. Almost seven decades ago, these laws were introduced to empower the Muslim majority of Kashmir. But today, when the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party is repealing and amending the same laws, the people of Kashmir are watching over helplessly. Experts say this move clearly depicts India's intentions in Kashmir. Shahana Butt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program. Out of London, Reza Kazim, Islamic Human Rights Commission, and out of Qom, Iran, Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi, peace and justice activist and researcher. Thank you both for being with us. Starting us off in London with Reza, why do you think that New Delhi has increased its pressure on this region since last year in the way it has?
I think we've seen a change in dynamics of the Indian politics, in particular with the rise of the BJP in the recent decades, and the kind of way direction the whole of India has actually gone in terms of Hindu supremacies, and how that is being manifested upon all sections of Indian society. And this old, very old area, which is occupied Kashmir, which is something that is something that has very much been part of the Hindu supremacist agenda in terms of trying to make sure that it becomes very much part and parcel. And what we're seeing is a settler colonial project being manifested, and India being seen very much and seeing itself in the light of a colonial power, and doing the things that a colonial power does. And that's what's being enacted within the case of Kashmir.
Well, Sarbaz Ruhollah, your perspective on the overall goal of changing these various laws, particularly pertaining to this area?
It's quite clear that the Indian politicians in BJP, they have concluded that if they want to resolve, so-called from their perspective, resolve the issue of Kashmir, there is no other way except to change the demography of Kashmir. Because at the end, Jammu Kashmir is a Muslim majority state. Still, Jammu Kashmir was the only Muslim majority state of India. So because of this population of the Muslims over there and their take and their hold on the lands and their position over there, they were feeling that the issue of Kashmir is not going to be resolved as they wish. So that's why they started all these series of acts from August 2019 till today. In 2019, in August, we had the abrogation of Article 370, an article that was claimed to give Kashmir a limited autonomy. Actually, that even that limited autonomy was not implemented as it was supposed to be implemented based on the constitution of India during all four decades. But that was abrogated. So there was an act of 35A under Article 370 of Indian Constitution that was actually giving three, four important points to the people of Kashmir. One, to define who is the resident, permanent resident of Kashmir, to define who can possess any immovable property in Kashmir, and who can get settlement and who can occupy the jobs in Kashmir. So by removing and by abrogation of the Article 370, 35A naturally was also nullified. And after that, the first step that took place, it was in May 2020, before this new law of land law, before this amendment of the law, in Kashmir, the event that took place was about the domicile law. Based on the domicile law, actually, they started to redefine who could be possibly a resident of Kashmir.
Okay.
And you know that under the great pressure of the central government, almost 12.5 lakhs of the domicile certificates were issued for non-Kashmiris, for those who were already in Kashmir, but they were not Kashmiris.
Okay, stay with me. Stay with me, Sarbaz Ruhollah. Stay with me. Let me get Reza back on this discussion. Now, some experts have compared Indian tactics to Israeli tactics against Palestinians and point to the close relationship now between New Delhi and Tel Aviv. Your take on that side of things?
I think when we talk about settler colonialism and the idea of a settler colonial project, as I mentioned earlier, it is very much in line with the Zionist project that is going on in occupied Palestine. And the links, as you mentioned, are things that have become very strong in recent years. And it is something that we can see that some of the ideas that are being used within Indian occupied Kashmir are similar to the projects that the Israelis have enacted within occupied Palestine in terms of land grabs, in terms of reassignment of land, in terms of taking all those things. So what we're seeing is very much, in that line, in that kind of dynamics of legitimizing or trying to legitimize that what they're actually doing is very much part and parcel of what this whole thing is actually about. And as Sarbaz Ruhollah actually explained very clearly, is that these laws are things that have actually been passed. And what we see within the Israeli Knesset is the same kind of things of passing these laws so that it gives it a framework of legality, legitimacy, etc., etc., which it basically neither of those things possess, because ultimately it is about colonization of land, it's occupation of a land. And what it ultimately leads to is that the discussion needs to go down the route of how this is going to be resisted, how it's going to be resisted by people on the ground, how it is going to be resisted and supported by people from outside of that area, in terms of making sure that those people are able to get their legitimate rights and so on. So those links that you're talking about are very much in the offing, and I think they have become strong, and I think they're going to become stronger. And I think what we need to think about is that all of those things are going to start to be enacted over a period of time, regardless of what the government in India will actually be saying. And the resistance to those kind of laws being normalized within occupied Kashmir, there needs to be a resistance that also matches and takes into account that this is something that is very much in the offing, and this is how things are going to develop in that area. So I think it's very clear the direction in which these things are going to go.
Well, Sarbaz Ruhollah, you heard Reza basically saying about how this is going to be resisted. Your take on that side of things, how do you think the people of Kashmir are going to continue to resist this type of pressure coming out of New Delhi?
You know, we have, as Reza mentioned, we have this clear history of Palestine in front of us, and every and each person in Kashmir is aware about what's going to take place, and not only Kashmiri people. Everyone in the world knows what is going to be the next step of India, because the history of Palestine is in front of us. It started with land grabbing, it started with so-called selling and purchasing the lands of Palestinians, but history knows better than everyone that not more than 1% of the occupied lands of Palestine were those lands sold to the Jews. Right. So the same thing is going to take is no Kashmiri is going to sell any land to anyone from outside. Let me make it very clear. Even not to Muslims of India. Kashmiris are not going to sell India lands to the Muslims of India, because it's not a religious matter, it's a political matter. By a sense, Kashmir issue is a political issue. We don't believe that it's an, you know, religious issue. It's not an issue related to Islam and Hinduism. That's what, you know, BJP want to portray. So Kashmiris are not going to sell their lands. But as what we observed in occupied lands of Palestine, it's not a matter of purchasing the lands. It is, it's actually providing an opportunity, providing an environment for Indians to start making, colonies. We know, and I know, and everyone else in Kashmir, any Kashmiri knows that the next step will be bringing Pandits, bringing those Hindus of Kashmir. Any Kashmiri is welcoming the Hindus of Kashmir. Pandits of Kashmir are most welcome. They are from Kashmir. They have been from Kashmir, and everyone in Kashmir is, you know, welcoming them back to their homeland, Kashmir. But now we are observing another colonial policy of Indians. They want to make colonies inside inside Kashmir, and actually those colonies will be the start point of the clashes in Kashmir. They will make, this move could make the condition of the Kashmir much more worse than the current situation. That's what we have to observe. I mean, after the domicile law, now this new law, which is actually just removal of one sentence, there is no need to, if you want to purchase any land in Kashmir, there is no need to be the permanent resident of Kashmir. Because before this, based on the law, that was, based according to 35A or 35A of the Indian Constitution, anyone who wants to buy any piece of land in Kashmir, he should be permanent resident of Kashmir. Okay. So now this has been removed. So any other party from India can come to Kashmir and start purchasing the lands.
All right. Well, Reza, let me get Reza back into this. Reza, do you think that the international community should get involved in this issue in order to try to resolve it? Or what do you see as being the key to trying to resolve this situation?
I think ultimately what you need to ask is the people of Kashmir what they actually want. And this is something that is fundamentally enshrined. And I think that means that there should be no interference from Delhi, there should be no interference from anyone else, and actually try and get that resolved in that kind of a way where the people of Kashmir have the right to determine their future and the right to decide what they're going to do in the future. And I think it's something that is fundamental in terms of how things are going to be move forward. I think any other option in terms of trying to divide up or carve up Kashmir is unacceptable to the people of Kashmir, and I think that's something that needs to be kept fundamentally very much in the minds of people. And we also need to think about that when we have interference, it needs to be kept, the idea that somehow the people who created this mess and the powers that continue to create these messes, for example, the US, for example, this is another colonial mess that is down to Britain down to the UK that has been created and has been left in this way. And those kind of people and those countries cannot be involved in that process because the solutions are not going to come from there. It's not going to be happening from there. So I think it needs to be something that is more regional, that needs to determine where things are actually going to go. And in terms of actually making those final decisions, it has to be down to the people of Kashmir as to where they will go and how they will determine their future and how they will figure out their political governance.
Well, Sarbaz Ruhollah, why doesn't the United Nations implement the UNSC Resolution 47, which states that India should hold a plebiscite and allow the Kashmiris to decide for themselves, as Reza was just talking about, if they want to be a part of Pakistan or India or independent?
Yeah, frankly speaking, the first problem that the United Nations has not discussed this issue of Kashmir. There is no enforcement for what they have decided. This is the first problem. The second problem is with the both sides. Let's be very frank. United Nations in its resolutions have clearly mentioned that both India and Pakistan have taken their troops back, which is demilitarized. And United Nations has given just right to India to keep the minimum level of the number of the forces there to make the environment ready for the plebiscite. But nor India, neither Pakistan did not follow what United Nations asked them. And it actually messed up with the conditions, after that, and nothing was changed, actually. And day by day, the situation of Kashmir became worse. The reality is that the Kashmir issue and the problem between India and Pakistan and Kashmir is not important for both, unfortunately. Let's be very frank. Even the Muslim countries, even the Muslim Ummah, is not paying as it should pay attention to what's going on in Kashmir. Now we are at the edge of a new Palestine. Everything is ready for creation of the new Palestine. Of course, Kashmir is under pressure all these 7 decades. But now their demography is under threat. And here by demography, even again, I want to make it very clear that we don't take it from the religious perspective, Hindu-Muslim issue. No. Let's be very frank towards this. The issue is about the new demographical change based on the colonial, agendas of India. They want to change Kashmir, and you should know that there already is, of course, from the hardliners, from Hindu RSS groups inside India, that those sorts of agendas against Kashmir, because they were believing that Kashmir is a holy land for Hindus, and it should return back again to Hindus, and these stuff is going on. This narration is also another part of the problem. We need Muslim countries, specifically those countries whom we can expect, Iran, Turkey, Malaysia, Indonesia, in collaboration with Pakistan, they should get together and they should put pressure on India. India has to accept Kashmir issue is an international issue. Also Pakistan, it's not a bilateral issue between Pakistan and India to resolve in between. It's what Pakistan has unfortunately accepted in 1972, the Chinda Agreement, where they accepted that Kashmir is an issue between India and Pakistan, which is not. Kashmir is an international issue. There are United Nations resolutions about Kashmir passed. Everyone and every just human being will confess that Kashmiri people have the right of determination and to decide about their future. And that should take place. India should accept it. But we are living in 21st century. Things cannot be like this. They cannot suppress the people. 10 million people cannot be on the blockade. You cannot cut your relation with the rest of the world for 6 months. This is unacceptable, specifically for a country like India, which is claiming to be a democratic country, which is claiming to be a secular country.
Okay.
That's quite unacceptable.
All right. Well, Reza, what do you think is key to actually bringing this situation, basically calming it down, or the Kashmiris getting what they want? What's key here? What has to happen?
I think there needs to be a fundamental change within the governance within India. I think that is, what we're seeing is part of what's actually going on right across India. This Hindu government, Hindu supremacist government that has actually come into power is going to be damaging for all sections of Indian society, whether it's in Kashmir or in India or whatever, you know, it's something that's going to be problematic right the way across. And I think one of the things that must happen is that what has been neglected by people in India is this basic issue of Kashmir. And what happens whenever you leave, you let an injustice to fester, that injustice then ultimately spreads and it starts to impact on other people. And people need to recognize they need to start resisting together against this Hindu supremacy, because this is going to target all sections of Indian society. Okay. Right across India.
And on that note, I'd like to thank both of you for being with us on the discussion about the situation in Kashmir. Out of London, from the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Reza Kazem, and out of Qom, Iran, peace and justice activist and researcher, Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
وَمَن يُشْرِكْ بِاللَّهِ فَكَأَنَّمَا خَرَّ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ فَتَخْطَفُهُ الطَّيْرُ أَوْ تَهْوِي بِهِ الرِّيحُ فِي مَكَانٍ سَحِيقٍ.
Inclining only to Allah, not associating anything with Him. And he who associates with Allah, it is as though he had fallen from the sky and was snatched by the birds, or the wind carried him down into a remote place.
The 31st verse of this chapter started talking about being true in faith for Allah. حُنَفَاءَ لِلَّهِ غَيْرَ مُشْرِكِينَ بِهِ. While being true in faith for Allah, and not associating anything with him. وَمَنْ يُشْرِكْ بِاللَّهِ فَكَأَنَّمَا خَرَّ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ. Whoever associates anything with Allah, it is as though he had fallen from heaven. فَتَخْتَفُهُ الطَّيْرُ أَوْ تَهْوِي بِهِ الرِّيحُ فِي مَكَانٍ سَحِيقٍ. And the birds snatch him away, or the wind carries him off to a very far place. In the previous program, we concluded that every action being done, even in the sacred house of Allah, must be with the intention of getting closer and nigh to the Almighty Allah. Having His orders in our minds, we have to try to fulfill the Almighty Allah's orders. So even the holiest places, which cover the holiest actions and deeds by the best of the people, in the best places, if it is not accompanied with true faith in the Almighty Allah, will result in falling from heaven. And there is no interval or distance between not being true in faith for the Almighty Allah and being taken away from Him. The verse says, فَكَأَنَّمَا خَرَّ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ فَتَخْتَفُهُ الطَّيْرُ. It is as though he has fallen from heaven, and the birds rightly just afterwards snatch him away. This letter fa, it is here to tell us that there is no distance between these two. And when a person falls from this height, from heaven, he will be involved in one of these two painful fates. Either he will be prey to the birds in the middle of the way, or in other words, by losing this assured station, he will be captured by the claws of low desires and restive passions, each of which snatches and destroys a part of his entity. Or if he could escape from them safely, he will be taken by a fatal storm which throws him away, far away, in a corner so harshly that his body will be scattered and every particle of it will be thrown here and there. And this storm seems to be indirectly Satan, who always lies in ambush. Admittedly, he who falls from heaven with the increasing speed, his body naturally loses the ability of making decision, and every moment he approaches the annihilation, and at least he won't be able to do anything, and at last he will perish. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا. We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
So, the one who loses the station of heaven of monotheism will not be able to take therein of his fate, and the further he goes forth, the more his speed of falling increases, and finally, he will lose the whole capital of humanity. So, this is the importance of monotheism. Truly, there will not be found a parable more clear and lively than this parable for polytheism. And this matter is also noteworthy that it has been proved today that in free falling, which is dropping, man has no weight. And that is why for the space travelers, if they want to practice this state of weightlessness, usually free falling is applied. The state of extraordinary anxiety that a person feels at the time of falling is because of this very weightlessness. So the person goes from faith towards polytheism and loses his firm support, and there he will be left in such a state of weightlessness inside his soul and body, and consequently extraordinary anxiety and worry will flow in his entity. All of these things are the output and results of not being true in faith for the Almighty Allah. Even if you are in the holiest places, even if you are doing the most righteous deeds, but you are actually not, because you are not true in your faith. So the verse states, حُنَفَاءَ لِلَّهِ غَيْرَ مُشْرِكِينَ بِهِ. And this is the importance of monotheism, and this is what polytheism does to human beings. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me. Why? And that's when faith begins.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners, dear brothers and sisters all around the world. I am Atan, the host of the program Viewpoints, and this series of the program Viewpoints is concerned with the thoughts and works and opinions of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, two experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Brother Ali Alevian and Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi. Brother Ali, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to
you. Wa alaikum assalam, and thank you for having me.
You're
here.
Welcome. And Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to you.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
So, we were enumerating some of the most outstanding features of Islam and Nabi Muhammadi, mainly and roughly translated into English as the pure Muhammadan Islam. What are the ways in order to reach to the original Islam based on the thoughts of leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei? In our previous discussion, we discussed about Islam based on the Holy Quran and the Sunnah, and we enumerated and we elaborated on that. In this episode, inshallah, we want to talk about Islam, the religion of jihad and martyrdom and shahadat. Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, nowadays the term jihad and martyrdom are misinterpreted among the people all around the world. And whenever you are talking about the jihad, the first things that comes to our mind, or when you Google even the term jihad, is suicide bombing first, and the second one is jihad nikah, or the marriage jihad, which was coined after ISIS. Unfortunately, two deviated definitions out of the term jihad. First of all, define for us what is jihad and what is the importance of jihad, and we say that jihad is one of the main features of Islam and Muhammad.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As we are referring to the Quran itself, according to the speech of the Supreme Leader, that in order to get the Islam, you need to go back to the original source, which is Quran and the Sunnah. In the Quran, the word jihad has been used in two ways. One is to struggle and in the path of Allah. This struggle has the overall meaning. Like, for example, struggling in order to have the halal rizq, for example. Struggling for your family, for yourself, in order to have sustenance. Or in order to pray, for example. Even in your prayers, when you struggle, this is known as jihad. This is known as jihad as well. So for this sure. is the one of the meanings that has been used in the verses of the Quran. There is another meaning of the jihad, which is basically fighting, which is more prominent in today's world, yes. basically, because yes. of these things that were going on. In the Quran, when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is talking about the jihad, He also talks about the struggling in the right path. That can be any struggle in the right path in order to reach to the perfection. That is also known as jihad. There is another jihad, which is the minor jihad. And this minor jihad is fighting. And in the Islam, in the life of Prophet, we see that this fighting jihad had a defensive mode, basically. Whenever enemies...
Defensive mode. That's right. Okay.
Whenever enemies attacked Islam, or they planned to attack the Muslimin or the Muslims of that time,
that's right.
at that time, in order to protect the Muslim lands mm-hmm. or the cities or other Muslims, the Prophet came and stopped them. And obviously, in stopping that, okay. Those enemies, yes. there was a fight That's at right. different places.
And at the beginning, they said that Prophet Muhammad used to perform a kind of proclamation, advising them, suggesting them, introducing yes. the ayahs of the Holy Quran. And then upon the defensive mode, he defended himself.
Okay. So in Islam, in the life of Prophet, what we see was a struggle in order That's to right. save your country, your yes. people,
based on peace.
Your nation. Based on peace.
That's right.
This jihad that we see today, mm-hmm. the way you gave example of ISIS and all those,
yes.
this all started after the demise of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, mm-hmm. which is not the Sunnah of the Prophet. Mm-hmm. Okay. We need to make clear yes. that when we are talking about the pure Muhammadan Islam, mm-hmm. we need to even see jihad in the life of the Prophet.
Yes.
And in the life of the Prophet, there is an infallible who orders for the jihad, That's and even right. that is in the defensive mode. For example, we can give an example of this time. If you want to see jihad, there was a fatwa of jihad in this time. And that was given by Ayatollah Sistani. When the ISIS attacked Iraq, he gave an order, a fatwa of the jihad, that the people of Iraq should protect their country.
That's right.
He did not set to invade a country. For example, during the 8-year wars that we had, the Iran and Iraq wars was at that time. Even at that time, there was a point when the Iranian forces, they by themselves, they planned and they went towards the Basra of the Iraq, and they got the factory of the salt and all those.
Yes.
When Imam Khomeini knew about this, Imam Khomeini called them back.
Yes, he said, ordered them to be back, yes.
To come back.
Yes, yes.
Why? Because in Islam, invasion is not there. Expanding the land is not there in order to just attack and get the land on the basis
and loot
of
the
sword,
country, that's
loot
right.
the country.
Okay.
This is not the part of Islam.
That's right.
So basically, when Islam talks about the jihad, we have two types of jihad.
Yes.
The inner jihad, which is the major, or you can say like the greater jihad.
Jihad-e-Akbar. That's right.
And there is a minor jihad, which is smaller, and obviously the outer jihad.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sayyid Mohsen. Brother Ali, let's get to you. Now, etymologically speaking, so many words are taken out of the word jihad, and you can find them on the social media nowadays and on the news and the media. And that is, for example, jihadists or mujahid. All of them, according to linguistic researchers, have negative connotations, unfortunately. And this is what the discourse analysts do on the media and the excerpts of the news, that jihad, mujahid, and jihadists are all of them connotated with something like terrorism, suicide bombing, attacking here and there, and all of that. And unfortunately, this is what getting us away from what leader said, Islam and Nabi Muhammadi. I mean, a term or a concept is, first of all, misinterpreted for you. Even the sad news is that among the Muslims, the term jihad and the jihadists and the mujahids are connotated with the, we can say, negative meanings. What is the reason for this and where the problem is?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Jihad is a sacred and important concept in Islam, and it has been misinterpreted. And the reason, I think, is quite clear, because it is that important that needs to be deviated. As you said, if you just do a simple search and ask about Islam, for example, in the internet, you will find something which has no connection with the jihad, the concept of jihad that we are going to talk about. Jihad, for those who might not know what it is actually a duty that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has assigned for the believers to do, and to sacrifice their lives and souls for the sake of Islam. And Allah promised them a good reward in the hereafter, in the day of judgment. That's why people, Muslims, mu'mineen, believers, are ready to sacrifice themselves on the way of God to do that. So this is the concept of jihad. When will it be mandatory on human on believers to do it? It has some differences in different...
This is very much close to the concept of shahadat or martyrdom.
Yeah, because it might lead to martyrdom and shahadat.
Okay. But this is not committing suicide or self-killing or something like
definitely.
That.
Definitely. It has nothing to do with committing suicide. No.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, jihad is also equal to suicide bombers nowadays in the world. Yes, they
so
do that.
So we shall discuss them, inshallah, step by step. So in an Islamic point of view, a Muslim actually is ready to sacrifice himself on the way of Islam, sacrifice his life and soul on the way of Islam. And it differs with suicide bombing. When will it be mandatory?
Yes.
And this is what the Imam of the society actually distinguishes for the necessity of jihad. In the viewpoint of Ahlul Bayt school of thought, this jihad, which has two forms, primitive jihad and defensive jihad, actually also has its own types, but in other sects it has another actually interpretation, and even a ja'ir or fasiq leader can issue the fatwa of jihad. So it is quite different. So there are different discussions that we do not want to dive into now for the time being. Anyhow, so jihad is a sacred concept that we do when it is necessary for us.
You
are not a lot in the jihad. Who is your target in the jihad? Right. Is it your Muslim brother or sister? Mm-hmm. Is there any point in Quran and Sunnah, in the religion itself, that you are allowed, for example, to do jihad against your Muslim brothers and sisters? Let's broaden the discussion and say, even against other followers of other religions, are we allowed to do jihad against them?
Are we allowed
to do jihad? So Islam, in a sense, has no enmity with anyone.
This is what the Jewish scholar and interpreter of the Quran, Robert Spencer, did. And unfortunately, he has got trend on the YouTube. If you just Google, we can say Robert Spencer regarding jihad and the interpretations that he has out of the Holy Quran against the kuffar, the jihad against the kuffar. Is interpreted this, and based on the verses of
the
Quran.
So are Jews and Christians kuffar?
Yeah, it was selective usage by them, and unfortunately, again, a Jewish brother, you know, just justifying the actions of what? Of the ISIS doing jihad against the Muslim brothers and sisters all around the world. So, I'm inviting the real scholars in English and the other languages to answer in a debate, such as scholars around the world or on a live screen or something.
Definitely.
Like that.
Okay. We need to tell them even jihad is not against the followers of other religions. Mm-hmm. Against anyone who is going to damage Islam or the Muslims in anywhere.
Yes.
No, in case you are living, we can have a peaceful life as we have in our society with Christians, with Jews, with Zoroastrians, with all the followers of other religions, even at the time of the Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, in Medina, there were Jews living there, there were Christians living there. There was no problem; they had a peaceful life. And after some interactions between them, there were a peaceful life. Anyhow, in jihad, only the imam of the society is allowed to issue the fatwa of jihad at the time of absence of imam.
Infallible imam.
Infallible imam. And at the time of the absence of infallible imam, his specific deputies.
Okay, there are two.
The public deputies of the imam.
Yeah, there are two imams. You said one of them was the infallible, the other one is the leader of the society.
The leader of the society, exactly.
For example, what Ayatollah Sistani did against the ISIS was a fatwa
on
jihad.
On jihad.
But most of the Western media say jihad against jihad.
Yeah.
Because the ISIS had its own jihad, and we had our own jihad, okay?
Yeah, again, I think we can understand very easily.
Yes.
For a Muslim who is actually who is confused that which one is jihad and which one is not.
A true jihadist, who is a true jihadist?
Yeah, which is the true jihad?
Okay.
I think it's quite clear. Let's look at the ISIS. Whom have they been against? Whom have they set up jihad against?
Yes.
Weren't Muslims or their brothers and sisters in Iraq their fellow followers of religion?
And also Syria, that's right.
And very few of these people in these regions were non-Muslims. But even as I said earlier, even jihad is not even against non-Muslims.
Yeah.
So we need to clarify these points to people. Jihad is not something that, for example, some extremists understood from Islam. Hmm. Let's look at the Islam and the beauties of Islam in the way it is.
That's all right.
Islam does not have any problem with other religions. Okay. And because Islam does not force us to make them, for example, to convert them to Islam.
That's all right. It was very kind of you said, Mohsen. Now we and Brother Ali Alavian, thank you very much
for
your presence
brother.
In the program.
Thanks very much.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, thank you very much again. Visit our website, parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, also our YouTube page, Call of Islam Radio. God bless you all. We'll be with Farbal Fi Amanullah.
Sometimes I can't see where I'm supposed to go. Sometimes I speed up when I should take it slow. But through all my hard times, when I lose my way, you're concealing my mistakes, yeah.
I know you're always by my side, never turning out your light. When I need you most, your stars will shine. When I'm out there in the darkest place, worn and tired, I can still see you illuminate all my skies. When it feels like I've fallen too far from you, there you are, guiding me through. Whenever I feel down, you can lift me up, turning my life around with your love. No matter how rough it gets, I can wear a smile, 'cause your mercy never dries, yeah.
Around the World with Reporters.
A shutdown is being observed in Indian-controlled Kashmir after New Delhi amended and repealed a series of decades-old land laws of Kashmir. The new reorganization law issued on October 26, 2020, opens up all of Jammu and Kashmir to every Indian citizen and removes every restriction that prevented large land holdings. Allows the Indian Armed Forces to take over land wherever they desire and gives sweeping powers to the government to take over any land and property for industrial use and bring in big businesses to set up their shops. People's Democratic Party President Mehbooba Mufti, while criticizing the government's move, accused India of land grab for big investors. The October 26, 2020 order repealed 13 state laws and amends 14 laws. Experts say this is to further the agenda behind the abrogation. According to historic date check, these laws were introduced to empower the majority Muslims who were suffering immensely under the non-Muslim rulers. Not only this, but the rights to buy and sell land in Kashmir were also confined to the people of Kashmir. Experts say India's move in Kashmir since August 5, 2019 has further internationalized this conflict. In response to the shutdown call by Pro-Freedom Camp of Kashmir, shops and businesses remained closed. Huge number of government forces were seen guarding the streets to avoid law and order problems. Almost seven decades ago, these laws were introduced to empower the Muslim majority of Kashmir. But today, when the Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party is repealing and amending the same laws, the people of Kashmir are watching over helplessly. Experts say this move clearly depicts India's intentions in Kashmir. Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
The U.S. economy just recorded its largest quarter of economic growth ever, 33%. Too bad it comes on the heels of a 31% plunge in the last economic quarter. The seven-month-long failure to pass a second stimulus package pushed stocks to their worst week in 7 months. The U.S. appears to have been taken by surprise by the long-expected autumn wave of coronavirus, with new lockdowns creating major anger among the businesses who weren't bankrupted by the spring lockdowns.
The small manufacturing businesses, even small service businesses, we need to assume their expenses so that when we're on the other side of the pandemic, they're still viable. There isn't a will to do that, and I think that's because the government's really controlled by the major corporations and major banks, and they don't want it.
Pro-Trump media coverage is dominated by the ever-ballooning allegations of major financial corruption by the Biden family. Joe Biden has never disputed the authenticity of the proof which alleges corruption, but he has denied the allegations of corruption. Anti-Trump media is focused on widespread fears of post-election violence.
I tend to think we're going to get through the election okay, you know? But, you know, there are enough crazy people out there, and it's been promoted. That type of hatred has been promoted, by Trump. It's been promoted by television stations.
Right-wing media says the polls show that Donald Trump might lose the general election but will handily win the Electoral College vote. Their claim is based around the so-called shy voter theory that Trump supporters aren't talking honestly to polling agencies. Centrist media says the majority of polls maintain a small but narrowing lead for the challenger, Joe Biden. They say Biden will win handily when the record number of mail-in ballots are totally counted, which could take many weeks. Add all that up and throw in a few more vital issues which we don't have the space to list, and it's clear that America is heading into a historic election in a hugely chaotic state marked by fear, uncertainty, and hysteria. The vote is on Tuesday, November 3rd. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
More protests were held in the Italian capital on Saturday over the government's decision to impose tougher measures to contain the spread of the pandemic. Early in the afternoon, hundreds of far-right demonstrators staged a rally in Campo di Fiori against a new decree which has ordered the closure of gyms, cinemas and theatres, requiring cafes and restaurants to close their doors at 6 p.m. Clashes with police were recorded during the demonstration. Later on Saturday, another protest was held in Independence Square, not far from Rome's central train station, where thousands of protesters vented their anger at the latest anti-COVID-19 restrictions. This demonstration, dubbed You Close Us, You Pay, was called by a coalition of social movements and base unions.
Unfortunately, the government has done nothing to reduce the flow of travelers on local public transports, which have been turned into hotbeds of COVID-19 transmission. Furthermore, too many workers have not received any payroll subsidies from the government yet. How can they pay their bills and mortgage installments?
The government cannot close cafes and restaurants at 6 p.m. Owners can scrape by, maybe. But what about us workers? These restrictions are killing us.
From north to south, Italy's been hit by a wave of protests, some violent, following the introduction of more stringent coronavirus shutdown measures by the government. The country's interior ministry has warned that these demonstrations have been infiltrated by subversives who are trying to stir up trouble.
As the contagion curve continues to rise in Italy, Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte insists he doesn't want to enforce another lockdown, but many fear a new national quarantine is becoming inevitable.
So many people have already closed like their activity after the first lockdown. Some managed to survive, but they won't survive a second lockdown.
The government is expected to present a decree including new restrictions as early as Monday. Targeted lockdowns and restrictions of movement between regions are among the new measures reportedly being discussed. Max Civili, Rome.
Violent clashes in Pakistani capital Islamabad. Police use heavy shelling to prevent thousands of angry protesters to march towards the French embassy in the capital. Protesters reached near the red zone after they forcibly removed heavy security barriers one after the other on the road leading towards the diplomatic enclave. At the heart of public anger is frequent incidents of blasphemy committed against the Prophet of Islam. Many protesters were injured in the violent clashes with the police. Over a dozen were also arrested.
This is just tip of the iceberg of a public anger against France. Protesters are saying that they are not going to settle down anything short of shutting down French embassy and expelling French ambassador from Islamabad.
French newspapers have repeatedly published blasphemous cartoons under the cover of freedom of speech. However, for Muslims in Pakistan and elsewhere, it was a politically motivated attempt to insult Islam, which according to a Pew survey is spreading across Europe. The official patronage to the blasphemers by the French government have added fuel to fire in Pakistan like elsewhere in the Muslim world.
If someone speaks against the dignity and honor of Rasulullah alayhi salatu wasalam, then we will say, my mother, my father, my children, each and every one of them, I am ready to sacrifice them on the dignity and honor of Rasulullah alayhi salatu wasalam. Now we are not going to tolerate it anymore. Until and unless the ambassador of France would have been kicked out from Pakistan, we will be here, inshallah.
When you abuse of Prophet, when you insult him, Nauzubillah, and when you